Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I like sports because it's an escape. I gotta be honest, like when the Supreme Court starts getting involved, you know, I kind of wonder where we're all, what we're doing, and if the fun is about to be sucked out of it. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, the Pac-12 guru, joining us now. What does this mean, Wilner? Supreme Court rules 9-0. What's your takeaway?
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court, you know, the fact that it was a 9-0 against the NCAA tells you a lot about the NCAA, right? I mean, it's near the top of the list of the most reviled institutions these days. I don't think that this ruling itself, I don't think is going to change a whole lot, right? What it means is it's a fairly narrow ruling. It means that the schools can't place a limit on the education-related benefits that go to football and basketball players. So they couldn't, you know, there's no rule that stops Oregon from giving a player a laptop. There's no rule that stops Oregon State for setting up some kind of postgraduate, getting a postgraduate scholarship or postgraduate, some kind of internship. All that stuff that, you know, most students can get is now available to football and basketball players. But the issue is what it means long term, because the ruling, especially Kavanaugh's concurrent ruling, basically said the NCAA is not above the law, which means that antitrust restrictions aren't, you know, there's nothing that will eventually stop people from suing the NCAA to get pay for play, is basically what this has opened the door for. It's not this ruling itself. It's what the how the judges define the NCAA doesn't have antitrust exemption, and so it's going to lead to a lot of other lawsuits that will, you know, eventually mean paying players.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, with us. Let's step back. Let's get to like 20 or 30,000 feet away from this thing, Wilner. College sports, I think, you know, we all sort of view it a little differently because it's amateurs, it's college kids. These aren't the pros. They're all going to be pros, or they all want to be pros one day. Are we blurring that line now? Will this look like kind of a minor league? Let's use in football, for example, or is that overstating it?
I mean, eventually it could, especially in basketball. Football is just such a different beast, right? You know, I think the biggest problem is the basic model of college sports, right? And we saw this with this ruling because, you know, Kavanaugh's concurrent opinion said, you know, you never see this. The NCAA model would never work in the professional sports world or corporate America. But the problem is that most of these schools, they've got, if athletic department is like a business, well, you got two subsidiaries that are making all the money, and then you got like 16 or 20 subsidiaries that are losing money. And in the real world, they would cut off, a company would eliminate the money losing businesses, which are the Olympic sports. But the college model insists that two sports pay for the other 18 or 20. And that's not real life. So they're applying real life standards in some regards to something completely different. And I think that eventually what's going to happen here is that football and men's basketball are going to continue to move closer and closer to a professional model with, you know, with pay for play benefits, all that kind of thing, long-term health insurance, all that. But there's going to be a cost, and the cost is going to be the schools are going to run out of money to pay for the money losing Olympic sports. So we're going to end up getting those sports are going to get cut. I think that's kind of the end result of where this is all going. You know, if you're a business, you don't stop spending money on the, you know, the one subsidiary that's actually making a profit. You get rid of the ones that aren't making a profit.
Wilner, I think it's interesting, too, because you make a great point there about what happens. But also, like, the immediate thought I had was all of these universities are not the same. Like, the sports are not the same. You pointed that out. But the universities themselves, there's a big difference between Stanford and Northwestern and maybe, like, Oregon State or even Oregon, in that if I'm Stanford, you know, I'm reaching out to Apple and Google and Tesla, and I'm going, hey, you can have paid internships now. This is an angle for us. How do you expect, like, those differences maybe to play out as this unfolds?
I don't know exactly how it's going to play out with this ruling and the educational benefits, right? You have to think that the schools that don't have, say, great access to paid internships at major companies will find other ways to make sure they compete. You know, Columbus, Ohio is not the high-tech capital of the world, but you got to figure that Ohio State is going to figure out a way to be able to remain competitive with the University of Texas, as Texas doles out internships at Dell or whatever other company is in Austin, right? I mean, they will find a way to remain competitive, I would imagine. But the other component to this is that next week, the athletes, the name, image, likeness thing goes into effect. And so starting on July 1st, the athletes can get compensated for marketing and promotional stuff directly from corporations, you know, in the business world. So it's going to be an interesting kind of yin yang to see which of these two economic developments, the Alston case with the education related benefits and the name, image, likeness with athletic related compensation, how that all plays out and works a complementary or in contrast to each other.
Oregon State has come out and said, hey, we've got this great NIL program. We've got former athletes involved in it. They're trying to get in front of it. You know, when you look across the Pac-12, are all the universities moving forward with some kind of name, image, likeness program so that they don't get caught in the dark, so to speak?
Yeah, they all are. Some of them have, you know, they've hired companies to assist with the branding. They've hired companies to assist to teach the kids basically how to brand themselves, right? How to market themselves to Instagram or whatever. So what Oregon State has done is now becoming fairly commonplace. What's going to be interesting is how the whole thing unfolds next week, because there are five states that have state laws on the books that are going to allow athletes to do this, and there's 45 states that don't have laws on the books. So, you know, are the schools just going to basically say, go ahead, you know, you're on your own. If you can sign for $1 million with Instagram, you go ahead and do that. It's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds on July 1st. But what the Beavers are doing, yes, they're getting ahead of it, but other schools are doing the same thing. Colorado did something similar, I don't know, maybe it might have been a year ago, 8 months ago. So they're all kind of following that model.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. He is the Pac-12 guru. You should follow him on Twitter, at Wilner Hotline. John, let me ask you, you had a piece where you sort of pointed out that the Pac-12 is looking at the expansion to 12, possibly, in the college football playoff. What kind of discussions are happening inside the conference as it relates to sort of the format that they play? North-South division, not everybody's playing everybody.
They've started to discuss. The athletic directors went to Las Vegas last week and they met with the new commissioner, and they have just started discussing whether they should get rid of the divisions and or change the number of conference games and maybe go to an 8-game conference schedule, right? I mean, the division thing, to me, if you got a 12-team playoff, I don't know how much sense the division thing makes, right? Because what if you've got if your North champ is 7-5 and that team upsets the South champ, which is 10-2, that could, you know, eliminate the Pac-12 from the playoff. But if you've got your first-place team against your second-place team, there's no divisions. It's just a group of 12, and the championship game is 1-2. Then, you know, more than likely, whoever wins is going to be good enough to advance to the playoffs. So I think the division thing is going to get, you know, removed at some point here in the next few years. The conference schedule is much more complicated because you have to have quality opponents, right? So if they get rid of a ninth conference game and make it a non-conference, well, what are you going to do? I mean, if you're at Oregon, are you going to just schedule Montana State? You're basically replacing UCLA or Utah with a Montana State. I mean, that doesn't do you any good, you know, with your local economics and your fan engagement. So I'm not sure what the conference is going to do about that 8-9. It's really interesting, and that's why they're pushing. I think it's going to be unsuccessful, but they're pushing to try to get the, you know, the champion guaranteed a playoff berth right now under the proposal that's moving its way through the pipeline. The Pac-12 champ would not be guaranteed a playoff berth, and they want to try to change that. But I think that they're going to come up short with that.
Earlier today, Colorado announced full capacity at Folsom Field this fall. Scott Barnes, the Oregon State AD, was on the show last week, and he said they're expecting full capacity at Racer. Rob Mullins at Oregon, the same. What's football going to look like in the Pac-12 in the fall?
I think it's going to look good. I mean, I think it's going to just get back to it'll be back to normal, you know, which isn't necessarily full capacity for a lot of these places, right? The question to me is, like, if you've got 50,000 people that would typically go to an Oregon game, how many of them are going to say, you know what, I'm just not, I know I can go, but I'm just not quite ready to be in a crowd of 50,000 people for 4 hours, right? I think there's still going to be some fans that are hesitant, especially, you know, maybe some unvaccinated fans. I don't know. So full capacity is a great sign, and I would think most stadiums will be 70-80% full. But I'm not sure that everybody is going to want to immediately jump back to normal. Everybody, meaning the fans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're going to see some people who are not ready to come back. Wilner, back to the 12-team possibility in the playoff. Scott Barnes, Oregon State AD, on last week said that he thinks absolutely the conference champions in the Power Five should be automatic qualifiers. How is that flying in SEC country, though?
No, my understanding is that none of the other conferences, and it is the Power Five, but remember, there, for your listeners, there's actually 10 conferences that make up major college football. And I think the Pac-12 might be all by itself with this, in terms of having the Power Five get automatic bids. Nobody else wants it. The proposal is for the 6 highest ranked conference champions to get automatic bids. Now, that gets the Pac-12 like 95% of the way there, but not 100, because you can see a scenario and say, you know, the champions of the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12 are ahead of the Pac-12 champ. And then so is Boise State and, say, Cincinnati. And then all of a sudden, the Pac-12 champ, which is, say, 10-3, isn't guaranteed a bid. That's the scenario that you know, Barnes and his colleagues and Larry Scott are concerned about. Is, now, you could argue, well, if you're ranked that far down, you don't deserve a bid, and that's true. But the Pac-12 wants to make sure they get a bid, so they're pushing for the automatic slots for all the Power Five champs. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think that everybody else likes it the way they've got it set up currently.
And finally, Larry Scott, his tenure officially will come to an end here at the end of June. George Kliavkoff will take over. But already Kliavkoff's, you know, has been out front. He's been talking to people. He's met with the ADs. How will that transition go in your eyes?
You know, I think it's actually going to go pretty smoothly. I think that, and a lot of that's because the athletic directors are primed for this change and, you know, are going to do everything possible to make it easy for Kliavkoff and so they don't lose ground, right? I mean, there's so many big things going on between name, image, likeness. And you got, you know, July 1 also is the deadline for transfers, right? The interconference transfer with no penalty, name, image, likeness, the Supreme Court ruling, college football playoff expansion. There's so many big things going on right now that the conference, and they've really had a lame duck now for many months. They can't afford to waste any time. I think the athletic director is part of the reason they went to Vegas last week was to make sure everybody is moving forward together and quickly so that they don't waste time. There's no real learning curve for playoff comp, and they can start to address these issues that are just gigantic.
Finally, the NCAA investigating Arizona State. It was kind of the news of last week. What will happen this college football season to Arizona? Meaning, how will this investigation potentially affect Herm Edwards and his program this season?
I don't know. I just don't have any confidence that the NCAA will resolve the situation one way or the other in the next 2 months. I mean, that would be so NCAA-like, right? I mean, they still haven't figured out the Arizona basketball deal. It's almost 4 years old. So to think that they're going to rule one way or the other on ASU before September 1st seems unrealistic to me. It's possible that ASU, you know, they're conducting their own investigation in addition to the NCAA's investigation. It's possible that they will uncover enough internally that they will basically self-sanction. Either somebody's going to get fired or, you know, they'll impose their own restrictions to try to get ahead of the situation. But I don't know that the NCAA will rule. And so then the Pac-12 could be facing a situation. I mean, ASU might win the South. They, you know, trot out in Las Vegas as the South champion playing for the conference title, and this massive recruiting scandal's hanging over the head, and that's going to be a bad look for the Pac-12.
Yeah, Scott Barnes last week, I was surprised he was willing to talk about it, but I asked him, you know, if true, these Arizona State reported violations, if they are true, how does he feel about it? Here's what he said, Wilner.
We preach and talk and execute in a way that is integrity-based. And to see somebody else playing, you know, if in fact they are, and any time, you know, in the landscape of college athletics, you see it from time to time. When you see it, it's disheartening and disturbing.
Are you surprised people are talking about this?
It tells you the depth of the frustration and even anger, because normally nobody ever talks about another school's violations, ever, right? And here you've got Scott Barnes, you've got Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame's athletic director, and you got David Shaw, the Stanford football coach, have all talked on the record about the ASU stuff. And that tells you the depths of the anger. And I think that that's because, you know, it has to do with COVID, and it has to do with a pandemic and public health, you know, potentially violating public health rules, endangering the community. You know, that's why I think it is making people's stomachs churn. Is to me, it's not your standard ethical stuff with recruiting shenanigans, right? It's because of COVID, what they allegedly did is beyond just ethical. I mean, it's almost a moral transgression as well.
Yeah, and I look at it and I go, okay, the timing of this, if you're Arizona State, am I crazy to think that Arizona State will not make a change on their own with Herm Edwards, given that we're looking at, you know, June 21st, then it comes, you know, obviously the summer and workouts and fall camp, and then a season comes. It just feels to me like if I'm Arizona State, I want to try to ride this out before I have to do something with Herm.
Oh, I think that that's absolutely true. The other thing to know is just the general culture and philosophy at ASU. I mean, they are all about bravado down there. And I think we saw comments from the athletic director last week, Ray Anderson. So basically, you know, there's no problems. I'm thrilled with the roster we put together, says the AD whose team is under NCAA investigation for the roster put together. You know, so I would be surprised if ASU moves on its own. The evidence would have to be overwhelming, and there would have to be a real fear that if they don't move on their own, that the hammer is really going to come down from the NCAA, because it is not in ASU's nature, either the president's nature or the athletic director's nature, to do anything that basically shows weakness.
John Wilner, you're the best. You can read him on Oregon Live, read him at the Mercury News as well, follow him on Twitter, hear him on this show. Wilner, thank you.
Thanks, my friend.
There's John Wilner. I want your reaction to that. What will happen to the conference? Will the Pac-12 be left behind? Are you concerned about it? Automatic qualifiers or not? Should the Pac-12 have to earn its way in, merit-based? Or do you like automatic qualifiers for Power 5 conferences? 503-417-7575. You weigh in. Coming up at the 1 o'clock hour, Shante Leggins, the new men's basketball coach, University of Portland, will be joining us. He's playing in the 7th Annual Baldfaced Truth Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament. That's on Thursday out at the Reserve. The broadcast right here on the station you're listening to. Miss Oregon, along with Neil Lomax, along with Shante Leggins, and a whole host of other celebrity golfers raising money for kids and funding Camp Exceptional, the summer camp for special needs and typical kids that'll take place at LaSalle High School in Milwaukee later this summer. The golf tournament funds the camp. That's how it works. But you'll hear it right here on this station as Judah Newby, Peter Sampson, Zach will be on the call at the golf course. It'll be like Jim Nance. There'll be a fireplace crackling in the background. Judah Newby will be giving you the update. Very quietly announcing, Canzano's on number 9. He's got a 12-foot putt here for par. Everybody be quiet. I want to talk to you about the Pac-12 Conference College Football Playoff. What did you think of what Wilner said? What do you think about automatic bids for the Power 5 conferences? If I'm the Pac-12, I'm a little nervous about being left out, really. Like, after years and years and years of being left out, I don't blame the Pac-12 for going, hey, we need automatic qualifiers. We need to know we're in this thing every year, that we're going to get at least one team in. I do think the other conferences are probably looking at the Pac-12 going, look, if you don't have somebody that merit-based thinks it should be, like, if you don't have a no-brainer for the top 12, you don't have any business being part of major college football. But I think if you are the Pac-12, you want this playoff to kind of give you the opportunity to shift the narrative on your conference. You want an entry in this college football playoff derby, so to speak. Let's go to the phone lines. Sean is in Sandy. Sean, what did you think of Wilner's appearance?
No automatic qualifiers, John, and we will show no fear. The Pac-12 is here. Oregon Ducks will be there. USC's getting better, and I love it when they schedule good teams. I've always loved it when the Ducks schedule teams like Oklahoma, Michigan. They weren't afraid to play LSU. They played in that Cowboy Classic a couple times, and I love it when they're not scared to take nobody on, and that's what you should do. We don't want low-hanging fruit. We want to see the best teams there, and I think we should be there to prove it.
Yeah, I agree with you in theory, except then I extend that same logic to the NCAA tournament, which has automatic bids for the conference champions, and you get into the tournament by winning your conference tournament championship. And we have seen teams that catch lightning in a bottle down the stretch in a season, like Oregon State did, that won the conference tournament that did enough in the conference tournament thing and advanced to the point where we're all going, if they're going to win this thing, they're going to get in. And then ultimately they do win it, they do get in, and they get themselves to the Elite Eight. Under that same logic in the college football playoff, you know, Sean and Sandy, if Oregon State were a football program, they would not have advanced. They would not have been in the top 12. They wouldn't got in. Merit-based, everybody would have said. So I'm kind of with the Pac-12 and going, look, I think your conference champion should give you a dog in the fight. And 12 spots to me feels like it's big enough, doesn't it? Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, what do you think?
Oh, my God. I mean, 12. They're going to have a 12-team playoff, and we still have to worry about our conference champion getting into the tournament. It's Bill Hancock and the BCS has absolutely rigged the postseason in college football for years. And the last caller that called in, under their system, it makes no sense. If we'd have played Portland State instead of LSU, we would have been in the BCS playoff. The one year we made it in the BCS playoff when it was just two teams, we played absolutely nobody out of conference. And we went from being ranked 25th all the way up to number 5 playing patsies and winning 65-20. So everything they say is garbage. They just rig it for the East Coast teams. And in 2001, I'm still angry. 20 years ago, they put Nebraska in the title game. They staged that title game. And until they have all the conference champions – automatically in the tournament. It's not a real playoff until we get Bill Hancock and all these committees out of it, and it's just a normal playoff where the conference champions get automatic bids and then let them pick their wild card teams. But give us our conference champion in the playoff. Let them settle it on the field. We didn't think we were going to be that good in basketball this year, and the Pac-12 was awesome. They were the best conference, top to bottom. No one predicted that. Yeah. We don't know until we settle it on the field.
The part of the issue here is I think the Pac-12, as Wilner pointed out, is alone in making this argument, because the SEC is not worried, right? They're not worried that they're going to be part of the playoff. And in fact, they're looking around going, why should the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac-12 get an automatic? If the committee doesn't think they're good enough, that means more room for more SEC teams. We can get a bigger piece of the pie. Pac-12's not doing that. Pac-12's going, they just want to be in this thing. And I do think there's a difference in mentality that has been created by what we have seen with this recency. There's definitely a bias going on. If the shoe were on the other foot, I would feel the same way, because I just want to see the best from your conference, play the best from their conference, play the best from the other conference, and then, you know, you have the five at-larges, and then you have the five conference champions in the Power Five, and then you go at-large after that. And if the SEC ends up with multiple teams in, two or three teams in some years, then so be it. But at least...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.